You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 2nd of April. Another blowout win for the Jazz. Why do we care if one guy does all the scoring? Playoff impact of last night's action, and a little bit of a homer edition on our guys and awards. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, a lot of geeky numbers, and today a bit of homerism, I think. I'm David Locke. Thank you very much for tuning in. You can get today's podcast on the new app, Himalaya. If you haven't downloaded Himalaya yet, it's got some really cool features. In fact, I'm looking at my version of Himalaya right now, and it's got the categories and the trendings and the recommendations for you and trending playlists. They've got some cool playlist things. I like their YouTube influencers as well. Check it out and subscribe to Locked On Jazz and all your Locked On podcasts. They're also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, as well as when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Jazz blowout win last night. Let's quickly run through the playoff implications. I don't think there's a lot to last night. You just got to tip your hat to darn good old Portland. I mean, they just kind of keep winning, right? Give them credit. They went into Minnesota. Minnesota clearly has let go of the rope. Karl Anthony Towns, for all of the love he is getting, you know, I guess in the I'm bitter about this today and probably need to get off my soapbox today. And I think, you know, Minnesota's performance last night gets my goat a little bit. That evidently in the awards world, you know, we don't have to play 82 games that matter. Like the fact that Karl Anthony Towns last night went 6 of 21 with 17 points and 12 useless rebounds in a totally irrelevant game, and Bradley Beal's playing irrelevant games and Kemba Walker's playing irrelevant games. I'm bitter about this today. I'm watching a team that actually is playing games that matter, and compared to a bunch of guys that are playing games that don't matter, and wondering to myself, like, do we not value that at all? And maybe we'll turn out to value it, but I'll get into it a little bit more. But last night, give Portland credit. They're playing games that matter, and Dame is just awesome. Dame was probably a little beat up, and then they got a great support group last night. Cantor had 20. Hood had 21. Portland's just good. Portland just deserves. Terry Stotts might be coach of the year with this performance here in the second half. See, I know Bud's a leader in the clubhouse and Mike Malone, but boy, what a performance by Terry Stotts and this crew. Last night was a 41 win percentage game, and they just notched another one. And have been just absolutely terrific in pulling in their 8 pick'em games. They've now gone 4-4. They've done it, you know, they've done exactly what they wanted. They finished with the Grizzlies back-to-back against the Nuggets, the Lakers, and the Kings. I don't know. We'll see what they do against the Nuggets and where Denver is on things. The Jazz last night had an 87% win possibility and got it done. We've taken care of most of those like we're supposed to. We have one more of those in our home game against the Kings. Otherwise, we're done with it. So let's quickly look at the win probabilities. I don't think they're going to change a great deal after last night, though. Give Portland credit. They are now projected to be clearly the 4th seed. That win last night was important to them. Warriors are still at 1. Denver's at 2, 3 games behind that. Houston is now 1 game just behind Denver. And Trailblazers are at 52, with Houston at 53. I almost have conceded that we're not going to get to the home court advantage, though not quite yet. But I do want to see that we play Portland, not Houston, in that, and I wouldn't mind that 4-5 matchup is what we need. Then that's it. Clippers and Spurs and Thunder behind that. Impredictable does the odds on all of it. I love the way they do their odds. So let's just look at what the percentages are. Golden State is now 94% for the 1 seed. Denver is now at 66% for the 2 seed. Houston, we want to be, is now 46% 3 seed, 31% 4 seed. Portland is 33% 3-seed, 35% 4-seed, 21% 5-seed. And we are 61% 5-seed, 25% 4-seed. So probably shouldn't have conceded it all the way yet. But it is simply, you know, we want Portland, as great as they are, like, just to their credit, but Houston, but maybe we'll rue that. And to their credit, they've just are clutching up and playing big games. And you know what? I don't think we have a huge coaching advantage when Quinn Snyder plays Terry Stotts. We had a huge coaching advantage in the first round last year. And 2 years ago, we had a coaching advantage because the Clippers didn't like each other. And that gave us a tremendous advantage going into those games. One thing I want to talk about. So anyway, that's give Portland credit. They just keep clutching up. A few things going on here. I want to talk about. Jazz defense is incredible right now. So since the game against the Clippers, the Jazz have only, using some of the old men, have only had six games since February 27th in which they've allowed the opponent to score more than a point of possession. I mean, you start looking at our metrics post All-Star break, which I think is a little misleading because of the schedule. Like, we can't have it both ways, right? Like, I sat here and preached all year long about the fact that the, you know, schedule was brutal pre-All-Star break and then post. But our defensive rating is a 104.5. Worth noting that the Rockets have the second best defense in the NBA since All-Star break. Then Toronto, then Denver, for all the people worrying about Denver and whether they still are defending. But we're 1.6 points better than any other team in the league. I'm flipping between metrics here a little bit. There's possessions counting and then kind of possessions estimating, and the estimating numbers are lower. Since All-Star break, the Jazz have the best differential in the NBA by 2.2 points. You know, we're 15-5. We're generally playing probably better than anyone else in the NBA. And we've blown a lot of crappy teams out. So it's a little misleading, right? 20 points against the Wizards, 21 against the Knicks, 31 against the Bulls, 30 against the Suns. What I wanted to touch on is I'm getting some of these, you know, well, Jazz are struggling. I know Kristen Kenny was on with the afternoon drive guys and got asked, why are the Jazz struggling with athletic guards? I'm not going down the premise of this conversation. Okay, Kemba had 47 irrelevant points last night. He was like 6 of 18 when Rudy was on the floor, and then the five-minute mark, we're up by 19, and Kemba goes off. And it's just totally irrelevant, honestly, totally irrelevant. Devin Booker's points were completely irrelevant. Moreover than the points being irrelevant, what I would tell you is if you look at our defensive rating in those games, the defensive rating is amazing. Depending what metric you use, last night we had a 98.3. It was one of our better, 32nd ranked defensive outing of the year. In the Phoenix game, our rating was like our sixth best defensive outing of the year. So why do we care if one guy scores all the points? They're going to be not. We don't play many games where someone doesn't score 90 points. That just, you're going to score 90 points. You're going to score 100 points. Right? There were, last night in the NBA, there were 9 games. Every single team scored 100 points last night. So you're going to score 100 points. Why do we care if one guy scores most of it if the team does it inefficiently? I don't. That's my point. And so I don't care that Kemba Walker scored 47 irrelevant points last night. What I care was that their offense was in the 21st percentile of all offenses and actually was the second worst of any team in the NBA last night. Like, that's what matters. Phoenix's game was one of the worst offensive performances by any team, and Devin Booker decided to go get his. Who gives a crap? So I'm not, I don't, like, I got it. Tweet today, like, oh, it seems much worse than it's ever been before. It's not worse. Like, if you decide, like, it's when Jokic went and had a bunch of points on Rudy, but Denver didn't score most of the night. And Denver some of the people in Denver were saying, well, like, Jokic clearly proved he's dominating Rudy, right? Except for the fact that the Jazz won by 8 or whatever it was that night. In other words, the Jazz defensive game plan was to force Denver to do the things that the Jazz wanted them to do. They did that, which is part of when you play Jokic is you want to take Jokic's passing away because that's what makes him go. So, I'm not great. Kemba got 47. I was unmoved by it, frankly. Like, 22 points in the final 5 minutes of a 17. Great, he got hot. Give him the juice. I'm just, you know, and I don't know. I mean, I would suspect ESPN's headline is Kemba Walker 47. And it's just irrelevant. So that's, I'm not sure I get that concern. Like, why do we care? I care about what our defensive and offense, same thing I feel about turnovers. I've talked about it all year. I don't care about turnovers. What I care is what our offensive rating is. We have high turnovers against Oklahoma City and our offense is really good. That's great. We have low turnovers against Houston and we can't score. That's not great. All right, I'm going to get bitter about awards here in a second. But first, let me tell you about Murdoch Hyundai. I'm driving the new Tucson. Sweet. Actually, the only problem with the new Tucson is I drove it for a day and they sold it. So I actually am returning my Tucson today back to Murdoch Hyundai because they sold it already. Like, I had it for a day and it got sold. I had a blue, pretty stylish. So I'm going to return it today and get a new one. But they're fun. They've modified it. The safety features are incredible. The camera safety features on this car for the price you're paying for a Hyundai Tucson are amazing. I'm always, every time I get in a new Hyundai, I am completely blown away by all the safety features. You can stop by Murdoch Hyundai in Logan. You can stop by in Linden and say hi to Blake. You can say hi to Jason, who helped us buy ours in Murray. He's a great dude. You can ask him. He's got a ski racing daughter and ask him how the season went and see how many runs he got in on the year if you're a skier. It's, you'll get a great experience. There's a remarkable amount of features you get, whether it's safety features or drives great. I'm really enjoying it. Hopefully they're going to put me back in another Tucson because this was really, it was fun to whip around in it last few days, 2 days and now return it. So we'll see what I get today. But, you know, it's a tough life. I know it's pretty cool. But so 4646 South State Street out in Murray. Check it out. Also in Logan and Linden, it's the Murdoch Guarantee, the no regrets experience that the Murdoch family puts the stamp on for everything. Today's show is also brought to you by our good friends at Slow the Flow. What are you doing to be a WER All-Star? We so much want to make sure that Utah has this fabulous environment and feel to it and want to make sure that you are doing your part to be a water efficiency rating All-Star. That's our kind of our fun little thing we like to talk about. That they've done the people at Slow the Flow have done a nice job with. This truly is important stuff. And as we move into the spring, go to slowtheflow.org. And at slowtheflow.org, they will show you all sorts of things you can do to save water on your lawns as you're watering, all the things you can do. Even though we had a very big winter and we have good numbers, this is the time to actually be great about it. You can schedule a free water check. You can follow the weekly lawn watering guide that they have there as well. It's pretty cool. You literally go in, check your the watering guide. Also, they have a residential sprinkler check that they're willing to do for you. So they do it all. Check it out all at slowtheflow.org and become a WER All-Star. The NBA awards first team guards, or all NBA guards. Okay, it's hard to argue. You know, on some of these guys are great, right? So Kyrie Irving is a first team guard, Dame, or right up there, Dame Lillard, Steph Curry, certainly deserve. James Harden, like that. Those are pretty well set. And then it gets into an interesting debate. Does Eric Bledsoe deserve to be discussed because of the fact that he's on a Milwaukee team that's going to win 60 games? Does Kyle Lowry, despite missing as many games? What about Ben Simmons probably deserves to be mentioned in there? Bradley Beal, Kemba Walker are being talked about. in that group of players. DeMar DeRozan probably deserves to be in that. Russell Westbrook is just stamped in there, despite the fact that his Thunder are now eighth in the Western Conference at 44-33. What's killing me in this discussion is if I bring up Donovan, I get rebuked. No, he's not efficient enough. And he's not. He's not greatly efficient. He's averaging 23 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists a game. Since January 1st, now the whole season matters, and he didn't start the year well, there's no question. Since January 1st, he's averaging 26 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, shooting 45% from the field, 41% from 3, taking 6 free throws a game. This is the advanced version of Donovan. It's pretty fabulous. He plays in the Western Conference. He plays on a team that has won 47 games. Kemba Walker's team has won 35 games. Bradley Beal's team has won 32 games. Really? We're just going to go decide that those guys deserve to be in ahead of Donovan? Russell Westbrook. I got it. He's averaging a triple-double. He's the most negatively impactful offensive player in the NBA with his possessions. Now, he creates, deserves credit. He creates. But where does his team rank offensively? He has an MVP candidate in Paul George, supposedly. And the Oklahoma City Thunder are a less good offensive team than the Utah Jazz. They're a less good defensive team, too. And yet, we're just going to put Russell there? Okay, I'm going to lose that argument. No one's willing to go there. But can we discuss Kemba Walker and Bradley Beal, that when I listen to every other national podcast and they start doing awards? So, what's Kemba Walker doing? He's averaging 25 points, 4 rebounds, and 6 assists instead of Donovan's 24, 4 and 4. Like, it's irrelevantly different. There's no difference. Then if you dig in a little bit, when Kemba Walker plays a Western Conference team, even with his 47 last night, he averages 3 points less per game. He shoots 8 percentage points less good from 3. His offensive rating goes from a 115 to a 104. He's a minus 13 offensive rating to defensive rating when he plays a Western Conference team. He's a minus 6.4 overall. Kemba Walker is feasting on Eastern Conference teams and irrelevant games. Well, Donovan didn't start well. Great. Kemba Walker in January shot 40% from the field and 31% from 3. He had a terrible month too. The narrative on Donovan is because he started the year poorly. And so since he started the year poorly, we just have stuck to this narrative. They've dropped the narrative that he's struggling, but they have not taken the narrative yet of how much he deserves. Bradley Beal, he's great. 26 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Is that really different than Donovan's 24, 4, and 4? Really? Like, we're gonna just put a guy because he's averaging 2 more points, 1 more rebound, and 1 more assist while playing in an inferior conference and having 15 less wins? 15! That's got to matter. Bradley Beal hasn't had the bad month. He's just gotten to play irrelevant games. Since February, he averaged 31 points a game in February. Great, his team didn't win any of them. And if you look at Bradley Beal, West first East, 2 points per game more in the East than the West. Shooting percentage, 3 percentage points better. Minus 3 in the Western Conference. You go look at Donovan. Donovan's team is winning games. In the Western Conference, in the Eastern Conference, if he plays, he shoots 5 percentage points better, 46 to 41. He shoots 5 percentage points better, 39-34 from three. He's a plus 10.1 if he played in the Eastern Conference. He averages 25 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists. The exact same as these other guys. The Bradley Beal, Kemba Walker argument over Donovan Mitchell has lost a lot of steam to me and a lot of value. And I just don't think it's valid anymore. Okay, Ben Simmons gets a little interesting. They've got 49 wins. We have 47. He's playing with three other All-Stars. Takes away a little bit of it. DeMar DeRozan, so inefficient. Playing with another offensive All-Star in LaMarcus Aldridge. And I think Russ is awesome. I think Russell Westbrook is totally awesome. At any point along the way, is Russell Westbrook at all responsible for the fact that any team he's led has never won more than 48 games? Right? Last year they won 48, the year before they won 47. They're going to do the same this year. Is there a chance that the level of inefficiency that he plays with actually caps what you can do with wins? Yes, there is. 100%. Yes, there is. 25 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. It's awesome. Worst three-point shooter in the league. 17 two-point attempts a game at 45%. Effective field goal percentage at 47%? Yes. He's holding you back. As great as he is. I got a hard time with it. I really do. I can't vote Bradley Beal ahead of Donovan Mitchell for All-NBA because he's more efficient when his team has lost 15 more games in a crap conference. Kemba Walker has no teammates. I feel for him. He's not better than Donovan. He's not. And if Donovan got to play in the Eastern Conference, the numbers would be the same. I have a hard time not having Donovan as one of the six best guards in the NBA this year. Time to touch on Rudy when we continue. Have you been to the barbecue pit stop? It is so cool. I love one of the best explanations to it when I was there visiting the store up in Linden was that if you're a golfer or a fly fisherman or you have these like specialty stores, that's exactly what the barbecue pit stop is. And you get this incredible selection. You get the expertise of their Kennedys and their Bryans and their Clintons. I'll explain that in a second. And then what you really get with the barbecue pit stop is a lifelong barbecue advisor. When I was at the Linden store, a guy came in. He bought a grill from them. They have an incredible selection of grills from the Traegers. Were absolutely really cool. I loved, obviously, the ones that have all of the bells and whistles and the gadgets. And I was all like about to spend a bunch of money because it could be controlled by Wi-Fi and all of the, I'm nuts. We all know that. But anyway, what I was saying is this guy came in and he had bought a grill for like 3 years ago. And he had been in, I think he might have bought a smoker. It was the Timberline Wi-Fi one that I love so much. I think this guy bought a Yoder. And he came in, and he had been in like three times that week just because he had suddenly got a relationship with Kennedy and basically had the lifelong barbecue advisor. Clinton is there. Kennedy is the guy up in Linden. His passion is just insane. I just kept writing down on my notes when I went and saw them. Passion, passion, passion. Over 300 sauces and rubs. Everyone has a sampler of their sauces. He's putting together his various sauce combinations. 75% of this with 25% of this. And just love it. And if there's a Kennedy in Linden, then there's a Clinton in Lehigh, and there's a Bryan in Salt Lake. The Salt Lake store is between 13th South and 3rd West. It's the barbecue pit stop. Check it out. If you're doing barbecuing and you're not stopping the pit stop, you're doing a disservice to yourself. Tim McMahon wrote a fabulous piece today about Rudy Gobert and his value as an offensive player. The Rudy Gobert third team All-NBA is kind of what everyone's conceded with him compared to Jokic and Embiid. I'm not actually willing to concede all the way there. So I think Nikola Jokic is awesome. I absolutely think that Nikola Jokic is awesome. Best passing big, incredible offense efficiency, 100% assist percentile with a 93% usage rate. He's amazing. So he is the most impactful, best offensive big in the league. Is Jokic's offense better than Rudy's defense? The Jazz are the number one defensive team in the league according to Clean the Glass. Jokic and Denver are great. They're the number seven offensive team in the league. And then flip it around. Neither of these guys' weaknesses are as bad as they make them. We're going to find out on Jokic's defense of whether or not it really is that big a deal and whether it's that bad in the playoffs coming up here. The same way you kind of find out about Rudy's offense. But Denver is 11th in the league defensively, and the Jazz are 15th in the league offensively. And both of them are better in their weak position than they're given credit for. And frankly, I think that Gobert's defense to Jokic's offense is probably equal. And I think Gobert's offense to Jokic's defense, I think Gobert's offense is probably better than Jokic's defense. And so I'm not totally willing to concede that Jokic is automatically better than Rudy Gobert. I'm just, because as I've talked about a million times, a good offensive game is just as important as a good defensive game. This is not a slight on Jokic. I just think they're both amazing. Joel Embiid has the skill set of both of them and is pretty awe-inspiring. I mean, really pretty awe-inspiring. With that said, not the most efficient offensive player. Right? Like, he's really not. When you start to dig in because of the amount of threes he takes and some of the other things he does, he's not, his elite skills are not as good as the elite skills of either Jokic or Gobert. He's pretty good, though. He's great. And when Embiid is on the floor, the plus-minus numbers are astronomical, which gives him, I mean, it's his plus-minus differential is maybe the best in the league. It's one of the best in the league. So I have a hard time trying to tell you that you're going to be able to, you know. Jokic's on-off numbers aren't as good because defensively they're actually better against the shot and some other things when he's off the floor. Rudy's offensive numbers and defensive numbers are both dominant. And then we get to Karl-Anthony Towns, who just because he scores a bunch of points on a crappy team, again, the Jazz are 13 wins more than ahead of Minnesota. Does this not matter to anyone? It's stunning to me that these things don't seem to have an impact. Hey, we got a brilliant coach who uses our guys to its maximum ability, but Rudy is dominating games on both ends of the floor. Rudy's plus-minus differential is not as good as Embiid or Jokic, partially because Derek Favors has been great this year. The Derek Favors, defensively, at center this year, is dramatically better than he was a year ago. It's a huge, huge difference. It's a major game changer to why the Jazz might be able to make a playoff run differently than a year ago. If you look at the 17-18 numbers last year when Gobert was off the floor and Favors was on the floor, we were terrible defensively. And this year we're great. We're actually better when Favors is on the floor and Gobert's off. Last year, when Favors was on and Gobert was off, our defensive rating was in the 57th percentile. We were just an average defensive team. We had a 108 defensive rating. This year, when Favors is on the floor and Gobert is off the floor, we're great. We're one of the best defenses of the game. So it's a huge difference. And so some of Rudy's numbers in that regard don't look as good because he's got a better backup. But boy, let me tell you, his impact offensively is just still real. Last night, the Jazz took 16 corner threes because Rudy Gobert's rolling to the basket. And that whole discussion we had yesterday about shot distribution is based on Rudy. Karl Anthony Towns is terrific. Again, all these guys are terrific. We're not trying to badmouth. Minnesota is the 11th best offense in the game. The Jazz are the 15th best. It's not that big a difference. Minnesota's 24th defensively. Utah's first. That matters, people. Karl Anthony Towns over Rudy Gobert is would be a travesty to the game. All right, that is Locked On Jazz today. Probably a homer edition, but some interesting discussions, hopefully. Thanks very much for tuning in. Thanks to Murdoch Hyundai. Thanks to Slow the Flow. Thanks to the Barbecue Pit Stop for all tuning in and being a part of today's show. Go check out Locked On MLB with Sully. He's doing a great job. And Locked On NBA, Ben Golliver and Wes Goldberg stopped by today. If you haven't read Tim McMahon's piece in ESPN, do so. It's fabulous on Rudy. Have a great day.